Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record Program Number 596, Update on September 11th and Related Matters. This has been recorded on May 6th of the year 2007. In this program, we're going to take a look at a number of different aspects of the global network and some of its many economic enterprises, a global network that was not only the generating force behind September 11th, but behind a whole lot of other things, and a global network which is at the same time deeply tied in with some of the most prominent and most prestigious economic and political interests on Earth, interests all over the Earth, and at the same time is inextricably linked with a sub rosa world of intelligence services and powerful criminals involved in a wide variety of activities ranging from semi-legal or shady energy deals to sports betting to cigarette smuggling and a whole variety of underground criminal activities which in turn generate a lot of money for this same global network, a global network which has some very powerful and prestigious corporate and commercial components as well. We're going to begin by taking a look at some links between this global network and a network that was cited by Sybil Edmonds as being involved not only with September 11th, but drug smuggling on a very wide scale, and terrorism, and a network which has some very, very powerful connections in many places, including Washington, D.C. And we're going to begin by going down to Jamaica, specifically to the World Cricket Championships that were held down there. And specifically, we're going to take a look now at the murder, and it was certainly determined to have been a murder of Bob Woolmer. Bob Woolmer was the late coach of the Pakistani cricket team, and that team was the focal point of an upset victory in the World Cricket Championships. That upset victory, in turn, upset a whole lot of people. And included in the people who were very upset with that upset, apparently, were some people who were involved with fixing sports and then channeling some of the money that was involved with that in the direction of Al-Qaeda and other Islamist and Islamo-fascist terrorist interests. I would note that one of the things that's not talked about here is the very significant involvement of people who were linked to Al-Qaeda funding with the thoroughbred industry, which is very much on in the focal point, in the public eye, because of the Kentucky Derby. Kentucky Derby, of course, the first of racing's famed Triple Crown, along with the Belmont and Preakness Stakes. What Patrick Ruby, and that's spelled H-R-U-B-Y, theorizes in the article which I'm about to excerpt is that, in fact, Bob Woolmer's murder was the direct result of the failure on the part of criminal fixing elements allied with Al-Qaeda and in turn with the Pakistani intelligence service to adequately manipulate the events vis-a-vis the Pakistani cricket team. I will have the full URL for this article. It comes from ESPN's website, ESPN.go.com. And again, this story by Patrick Ruby, spelled H-R-U-B-Y, murder by cricket. It is excerpted as follows. Ruby writes, "Who killed Bob Woolmer? Here's the only conclusion I can draw with any degree of certainty. Hang around cricket long enough, like, say, a week, and you'll end up through the looking glass, way through the looking glass. Oliver Stone on the Kennedy assassination territory. I talked to a guy, by the way, guys with capital G, a guy who knows stuff, a guy in the information acquisition business. I can't tell you more, sorry, we meet in the lobby of the Pegasus at night. I suggest we get a drink. He walks me past the hotel gym, past the poolside bar, past the chatty barkeeps and the tabloid writers downing red stripes. We sit at the far end of the pool on white plastic chairs in near darkness. This is what he tells me. He says Jamaica's ruling political party is gunning for an unprecedented fifth consecutive term that the current prime minister is widely liked, but considered a bit dumb, The current government is counting on the World Cup, i.e. cricket, to help it win the upcoming elections, a sound strategy in a sports-mad nation where high school track meets are shown on primetime TV. He says Woolmer's murder has shot this all to hell, though, and that the failure to catch his killer or killers has added to a growing, widespread discontent with the tournament and the people in charge of it. He says Woolmer was definitely murdered. Of this, he has no doubt. He says he saw a picture of Woolmer's body. There was a mark on Woolmer's neck on the right side, just below the jawline, that suggests physical trauma. He says he's spoken to someone in international intelligence, someone well-placed, and that ever since the United States was able to interdict much of al-Qaeda's funding after the September 11th attacks, Dave Emery says, take that with a grain of salt. Continuing, the terrorist group has used illegal sports gambling in India and Pakistan as a major source of revenue. He says al-Qaeda has ties to Dawood Ibrahim, the Al Capone of India, a man accused of masterminding a 1993 bombing that killed 257 people in Mumbai, a man with ties to the bookmaker allegedly linked to Samuels, a man rumored to have lost millions on the Ireland-Pakistan match. He says al-Qaeda also has ties to Pakistan's Inter-Service Intelligence Agency, the former and some say current patron of Afghanistan's Taliban. He says the ISI is intertwined in both the Pakistani government and Pakistani cricket, and that one of the members of the Pakistani cricket team's traveling party is actually an ISI operative. He says that al-Qaeda may have put a lot of money on the Pakistani team and may have been disappointed in its poor performance, murderously so. He says that Woolmer may have found himself between a rock and a hard place because despite what his friends and family have said, the coach knew about larger-scale corruption and was going to blow the whistle. He says Woolmer found out that three international umpires were being paid off and that the ISI had set up offshore banking accounts for them. He says the bank accounts were financed with Chinese money. I ask why. He doesn't elaborate. He says he believes the ISI is involved in Woolmer's murder. He says someone in the Pakistani team party knows what happened and during Pakistan's final World Cup game against Zimbabwe, after Woolmer's death, a member of the team party was spotted with his feet up drinking champagne, and the champagne sipper in question is probably ISI. He says all of the above is why Pakistan dispatched two diplomats to Jamaica. While mouthing the word diplomats, he makes air quotes with his hands. He says the Jamaican police have no suspects and no motive, and yet a coroner's inquest has been scheduled. He says this is a way to drag things out. He says he does not believe the Jamaican police will solve the case. Last ball. This is it. The Sri Lankan bowler races toward the wicket, lets the ball go. One hop, the batter swings and misses completely, the ball shattering the little white thingamajig resting atop the three wooden stumps behind him. It's the equivalent of a strikeout. Game over. The Jamaican guys erupt in cheers. The British journalists look heartsick. On the screen, one of the party pool kids buries his face in his hands, sobbing. A beautiful young Sri Lankan girl shakes her hips, dancing around her seat, waving a national flag like a shipwrecked sailor swinging an orange smoke rescue flare. Who killed Bob Woolmer? The truth is that no one really knows, and maybe no one will ever know, and the only people who might know aren't saying. Yet take a picture, right here, right now. None of that matters. For a moment, what matters is the moment. The joy in the lobby and despair in the stadium pool, the fleeting sense of complete and total remove from toxicology reports and match fixing, coroner's inquests, and potentially deadly towels, from the sins of cricket and life itself, the horror of room 374, and the dark secrets lurking within. All of it a waking nightmare, half forgotten, but lingering, a crime scene photograph stuffed into the junk drawer of our collective dread, yellowing and sinister, the blood and the vomit, the last silent gasps of a man left to die on the altar of a country game. The sordid compromises of everyday existence that we call sport. That again, from the ESPN website. I'll have the full URL, that article by Patrick Ruby. I think it speaks for itself. Perhaps following that up, first of all, let me encourage people who are listening to this program to make a point of reading the book Dollars for Terror by Richard LaBeviere. That book was published in French in 1999 and in English in 2000, both editions well before, obviously, September 11, 2001. And yet it anticipates many of the events that were to be catapulted into visibility, and many of the forces that were to be catapulted into visibility to a greater extent anyway by September 11th. The global network, a corporate network, an intelligence network, a fascist network, and a criminal network has many different faces. There is an entire chapter in the aforementioned book, Dollars for Terror, by Richard LaBeviere, called Islamist Deal-Making and Organized Crime. It's about exactly what it talks about. It's about Islamist organizations, terrorist organizations, Al-Qaeda, Islamic Jihad, and Hamas among them, as well as Hezbollah, that in turn are deeply involved with various types of criminal activity. In many of our visits with Daniel Hopsicker and in many of our explorations of the South Florida portion of this international criminal milieu, we have come across links with a variety of things: drug smuggling, the fixing of elections, the fixing of gambling results, and many other things, including terrorism and September 11th. We've also seen some evidentiary tributaries running in a big, big way toward Eastern European and Russian organized crime, and we're going to revisit those later. Now, bearing in mind, first of all, the fact that the fixing of major sporting events isn't exactly news. It is in the sense that it's a very, very important phenomenon. It is not a new phenomenon. I would refer listeners to, among other programs, For the Record Program 304, titled Illegal Procedure, about organized crime and sports betting and the National Football League. Something to consider in connection with the death of Bob Woolmer is the fact that apparently his team certainly had some Islamic fundamentalists among its or on its roster, and that apparently some of their conduct had caused friction between them and Bob Woolmer. Whether this figures into the scenario advanced in the Patrick Ruby ESPN article or not, I don't know. But this again is from the Deccan Herald. Again, a full URL. From May 22nd of 2007, Woolmer case takes a fatwa twist. Woolmer was upset that several members of the Pakistani team were followers of the Tablighi Jamaat, a Muslim revivalist movement. Pakistani media manager Pervez Mir indicated on Tuesday during the BBC's Panorama program. A fatwa angle has emerged in the mysterious murder of Bob Woolmer, with the disclosure that the Pakistan coach was reportedly unhappy with the time spent by players on prayers. Woolmer was upset that several members of the Pakistani team were followers of the Tablighi Jamaat, a Muslim revivalist movement, Pakistani media manager Pervez Mir indicated on Tuesday during the BBC's Panorama program, which focused on Bob Woolmer's murder in a Jamaican hotel 6 weeks ago. Were they acting with, in some way, elements of the ISI, the Pakistani intelligence service? That remains to be seen. By the way, in For the Record programs 500 and 525, we visited with, among others, Sander Hicks, the author of the book Big Wedding, and we explored, among other things, the allegations of Randy Glass and some of the dialogue between him and a Pakistani arms dealer and apparent ISI agent named R.G. Abbas, which directly foreshadowed bringing down the World Trade Center years in advance. Another aspect of the milieu that precipitated September 11th, and one that gets very little discussion, and that concerns the links between the Islamo-fascists of the Muslim Brotherhood and its many outcroppings, with not only some of the old guard from the Third Reich days, such as François Janoux and Omar Ney Joachim von Leers, but also some of the links between the milieu of Al-Qaeda and not only other terrorist incidents such as the first World Trade Center attack, the Oklahoma City bombing of 1995, and the AMIA bombing of 1994 that are not generally thought to have been linked with Al-Qaeda. We've taken a look at some evidentiary tributaries linking the milieu of September 11, 2001 with other terrorist attacks and in turn with so-called neo-Nazis. We're going to turn next to an allegation that comes to us courtesy of elements of German intelligence, which maintains that by early 2001, Osama bin Laden was beginning to finance various European far-right groups and various neo-Nazi skinhead groups in particular to, among other things, disrupt the G8 summit in Genoa, Italy that summer, as well as other things. This from February 14th and from the Corriere della Sera in Milan. This, in turn, is an article from the BBC's Monitoring Europe and supplied by the BBC Worldwide Monitoring from February 14th of 2001 from the Corriere della Sera. According to Germany's intelligence services, Osama bin Laden, the Islamic extremist, has started to finance far-right groups throughout Europe in order for them to carry out attacks in Italy during the G8 summit meeting in the summer of Genoa, an Italian paper says. General Sabato Palazzo, head of the Carabinieri's Special Operations Section, has said that the threat should be taken seriously and that fringe groups who do not want the event to take place are being monitored. The following is the text of a report by Antonietta Calabro. Quote, Osama funding neo-Nazis against G8 summit, unquote, by Italian newspaper Corriere della Sera on the 14th of February. Rome. A red alert over the G8 summit in Genoa has come in the last few hours from Germany. According to information in the hands of Germany's intelligence services, Osama bin Laden, the kingmaker of Islamic terrorism, has started to finance Nazi skinhead groups throughout Europe in order for them to carry out attacks and acts of violence in Italy during the summit of heads of states and heads of government, which is to be held in 5 months' time in the regional capital of Liguria, Genoa. The report, which has already received initial confirmation, came to light during preparations for an international conference on terrorism and intelligence prospects for the 21st century, organized by the CEAS, the Center for High-Level Studies in the Fight Against Terrorism and Political Violence, which is to be attended by, among others, the chairman of the U.S. National Intelligence Council, the head of the Analysis Department of the BND, Germany's Counterespionage Service, and Professor Christopher Andrew Spelling, Christopher Andrew, author of the Mitrokhin Archive. So, according to a report carried by the BBC and the Corriere della Sera and originating with German intelligence in early 2001, Osama bin Laden, among other things, financing European neo-Nazi networks. One of the directors of the Bank al-Taqwa, the Muslim Brotherhood financial institution headed up by former Nazi spy Yosef Nada, the fellow who helped the Grand Mufti escape from Germany at the end of World War II. This director is named Ahmed Huber, nay Friedrich Armand Huber. He in turn is not only a protege of the Grand Mufti, but also of Joachim von Leers, in charge of anti-Semitic propaganda for Joseph Goebbels' Third Reich propaganda ministry, later converting to Islam, changing his name to Omar Amin von Leers, and becoming the head of the so-called Institute for the Study of Zionism, an anti-Semitic propaganda vehicle for the Nasser government in Egypt. Ahmed Huber was his protege. Ahmed Huber, among other things, in addition to his Bank al-Taqwa links, in addition to his neo-Nazi links, in addition to his links to the old guard, such as people like François Genoux, with whom he met on a daily basis, has links to European and American neo-Nazi groups. In For the Record program number 456, we go into some of the so-called neo-Nazi links to September 11th, links linking the World Trade Center attack with the first World Trade Center attack, the Oklahoma City bombing, and the AMIA bombing, among other acts, and linking those in turn to so-called neo-Nazis, as well as to the Old Guard. One of the many, many faces of the entity that this global network entity that we've been examining in one manner or another for many, many years since September 11th, among the many faces it has in addition to international neo-Nazi links are links to not only Italian neo-fascists, but also to the links of the P2 milieu, yet another milieu that links the old guard of the World War II period to clandestine operators and conspirators in the Cold War period, to some of the neo-Nazi and neo-fascist elements that we just looked at and that we're going to look at again, and in turn, to the milieu of the Bank Altaqua. A fellow named Pierfelice Barchi, a law partner of the former Swiss Justice Minister Carlo Del Ponte, is in turn not only the attorney for Youssef Nada, but was formerly the attorney for the Swiss investments of Silvio Berlusconi, Italian Prime Minister and a member of the P2 Lodge. The Banco del Gottardo, closely connected to the Bank Altaqua, also formerly the Swiss subsidiary of the Banco Ambrosiano, headed up by former P2 Lodge member Roberto Calvi. So I'm sure people are wondering, what did he just say? There are many faces to this particular network. In For the Record 595, we took a look at what, for veteran listeners, could be thought of as the revival of the Super Seize Me, in connection with the events in and around the Strategy of Tension and the shooting of Pope John Paul II, we took a look at what became known as the Super Seize Me. This was a subgroup of Italian intelligence strongly linked with the neo-fascist P2 Lodge that basically functioned as an intelligence service within an intelligence service and was deeply involved in all sorts of activities, from assassination to the staging of terrorist incidents, arms smuggling, and all kinds of things. And as we looked at in For the Record 595, not last week, but the last broadcast, in 2004, a Seize Me-connected group once again was established to, quote, fight terrorism, unquote, but its clandestine nature and its vague activities suggest that there may be a whole lot more to that particular group. Now, in connection with the, quote, new Super Seize Me, and in connection with the discussion that we looked at, alleging that among the reasons that Osama bin Laden was financing European neo-fascists was to disrupt the Genoa summit, consider the following. This is from the Genoa daily paper Il Secolo 19 from September 1st of 2001. After the Genoa summit, this is by somebody named Wu Ming, 600 Nazi infiltrators in Genoa, ex-chief of Genoa police confirms. Ex-chief of police Colucci says 600 Nazi infiltrators were in Genoa. He confirmed the same news he had denied 1 month ago. Camouflaged neo-Nazis among the peaceful protesters of the Genoa Social Forum. Yet another resounding revelation, including even a precise figure, 600 infiltrators. The former Questori, local chief of police Colucci, whom the Ministry of Internal Affairs sacked after the July 20th through 21st riots, stated this during the 7-hour-long interview in front of the parliamentary committee investigating G8-related events. This officially confirms the presence of groups of far-right provocateur. The GSF had given the alarm in the days of the demonstrations, even 10 days before the summit. Il Secolo 19 had published confidential police files on potential infiltrations. For the first time, Colucci was explicit about neo-Nazis. He answered a question by PRC, the communist Congresswoman Graziella Masia, "You received intelligence reports on ultra-right groups planning to join the demonstrations. Why did you not stop them?" The former chief of police said, quote, "As far as I know, the 600 ultra-right infiltrators did not take part in the violent action on the territory." So who knows about this particular allegation? It appears to come from the Italian left press. A not a prediction, but a casual dismissal of the significance of Osama bin Laden, and certainly any of the allegations of neo-Nazi links, took place in Time magazine, of all places, and on the Time CNN website. There was the following story by Tom Karen from Wednesday, June 20th of 2001. Bin Laden rides again, myth versus reality. And this article basically talks about the allegations of neo-Nazis hooking up with radicals and anarchists at the Genoa summit to cause disruptions. By the way, one of the last article that the late A.J. Hatfield wrote for Online Journal was about this same connection, the allegation that Osama bin Laden was financing neo-Nazis, and then later, not very long afterward, A.J. Hatfield was found dead. I think it was in Arkansas or Alabama, an alleged suicide. Time magazine was very dismissive of Osama bin Laden on June 20th of 2001. On side two, we're going to take a look at Newsweek, MSNBC, and they're being very dismissive of the notion that the Muslim Brotherhood might be something less than sinister. Time was saying in June of 01, still, the media's picture of bin Laden sitting in a high-tech bat cave in the mountains around Kandahar, ordering up global mayhem at the click of a mouse, is more than a little ludicrous. Yes, the various networks of Islamist terror have made full use of the possibilities presented by technology and globalization, but few serious intelligence professionals believe bin Laden is the puppet master atop a pyramid structure of terror cells. It's really not that simple, but personalizing the threat, while it distorts both the nature of the problem and the remedy, is a time-honored tradition. Well, this article is right in one limited sense in that this is a distortion of the situation. Actually, there is a global network with many, many widely disparate facets, and we're going to take a look at the Muslim Brotherhood and Eastern European organized crime connections on the other side. But this network is very, very well connected. It hasn't been touched. While people have been paying attention to hocus pocus, such as, you know, the allegations about the controlled demolition, et cetera, this network, which is actually there in plain view for someone that wants to do the research, has not been touched. And so at any time, something along the lines of what we've already seen or worse could very easily take place, and it would not be a source of great difficulty or concern to this very same network. Because what matters is to keep the network going, to keep the money flowing, and to keep the goods that generate that money flowing. And minor incidents like war, September 11th, and other things, well, unfortunate, but simply part of the business cycle under the circumstances, and I mean that quite literally. And that's what's so scary. That cycle has not been touched. But we're going to take a look at all of this inside, too. If you are only listening to the broadcast, you're missing the better part of the For the Record experience. Please get in the habit of utilizing the website at www.spitfirelist.com. That website features all kinds of things, from a mini library of old anti-fascist books to article length descriptions of each For the Record show, audio files maintained by sister station WFMU with the entire For the Record series available. Spitfire makes the last four For the Record shows available for download as well. So tons of information, lectures, documents, books, all kinds of things available on the Spitfire website and linked websites. Please do use those. And among the pages on that website is a page to click on to support the work that I'm doing. If you don't like what you're hearing, there's no better way of fighting back than supporting that work. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record, program number 596. Update on September 11th and related matters. My name is Dave Emery. This has been recorded on May 6th of 2007. Thanks for listening.